Good evening. It is Tuesday, September 18th, and it is 5:30. We're calling to order the meeting of the Planning Commission. This evening, the first thing on our list here on our agenda is the adoption of the agenda. Has everyone received a copy of the agenda, and do I have a motion to adopt the agenda for tonight's meeting?
Move to adopt.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please raise your hand. That is unanimous. And the next on the list is approval of minutes. We had deferred some of the approval of the minutes previously. Everybody should have received three sets of minutes from 7:31, 8:21, and 9:04. Mm-hmm. Do I have a motion? Let's do one at a time. So for the July 31st, 2018 meeting, do I have a motion to approve the minutes provided for that day?
So moved.
It's been moved. Is it
second?
All those in favor, please raise your hand. Right, that is unanimous. Moving on to the minutes from August 21st, 2018. Those minutes have been provided. If everybody has had an opportunity to review those minutes, do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Corrections? I saw you move for a second. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All right, again, that's unanimous. And finally, September 4th, 2018 meeting. Everybody should have received a copy of those minutes. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from that day? Yes, no, not sure.
I so move.
Moved. Second?
Second.
Second, any discussion about the minutes from that day? It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? Any abstentions? We have one abstention. All right, now that we've got that out of the way, we're going to move on to our discussion. Item number D on the agenda is the discussion of the document. So at the last, for the audience purpose. At the last meeting, the Land Use Planning Commissioners had requested some additional documents to be provided to aid us in our deliberations that we will be continuing to do tonight. And so I want to give the staff the opportunity to respond about the documents and the information requested. The first question for everyone is, did everybody receive the email? There were a number of emails with large attached documents. I'm seeing head nods that everybody received those. Well, I'm going to hand it over to you, Mr.
Right. So my name is Jim Bolger with the Department of Community Development, and I apologize for missing your last hearing. It sounds like it was an interesting one. And in fulfillment of one of the requests that was made at that meeting, the department compiled numerous pages of information that we provided to you that the chair just referenced. I think it was in all in excess of 400 pages that went out on September 11th. So 1 week ago, and there's a tremendous amount of information that was provided in those packets of information that you received, and along with that, I also included a message to the commissioners regarding how the department really felt like the Planning Commission should be looking at that information. That there is already in the record a staff report associated with the comprehensive plan amendment before you. That this information is entered kind of after the record has closed, but because you were interested in looking at this more deeply, that we felt like while the information that you have available already from the staff reports is adequate to make a recommendation to the department for the proposed amendment associated with George's Corner, that this information would be optional for those of you that have the opportunity to go through that and wanted to consider it in your deliberations tonight as you get to that. But we didn't think at this point it was something that was an absolute necessity for planning commissioners to take a look at. Obviously, you're busy folks and probably would have had a hard time kind of sequestering time to go through those 400 pages of information that we provided. So I asked for a little bit of time on tonight's agenda to kind of introduce the topic, have a discussion about how you feel about that, and also to introduce the idea of kind of doing a programmatic review of the process that we've gone through this this comprehensive plan amendment session. As you're aware, we have a lot of new staff before you for this process. You've had the ability to participate in a number of these amendment processes in the past. And so if that was something that the commission was interested in pursuing, we'd also have an opportunity to put that on an upcoming agenda so that we can look at what we've gone through. But we really wanted to focus tonight on the remaining proposed amendments to the comprehensive plan before we really get into kind of doing the after-action report and evaluating the process. So that's all I have as far as anything I wanted to say, but I'm interested to hearing what the thoughts of the commissioners are.
Well, I think, for the record, Gina Buskirk, for the record, I think things fall, from what I saw in the review, into a couple of categories. I think there's some questions that have been raised about basically procedure or the policies in place. And I know that was raised by Kara Ann about the county deciding who pays, you know, who, if it's a county-sponsored amendment, how does that happen versus if it's a citizen or a business or a corporation.
Sure.
And on that issue, I think that's a policy issue. I don't know that affects our deliberations, but I think it is a valid issue that's raised.
Sure.
And so for me, I think I would suggest that that issue be something that we come back and revisit. So whether it's a current policy in place or something that we need to be educated on so we can have a better understanding on that, I think that I would ask that we revisit that.
Sure.
Not as part of deliberations, but as part of the review post-deliberations.
Yeah, and certainly in this case, I think I probably created a lot of the misunderstanding over this particular amendment in some of the information that did get sent to you in this packet last week. There were a lot of email correspondence. I was not party to those correspondence when they were going on, so I probably created the impression that the property owner, the affected property owners, at least associated with one of the properties up in George's Corner, he had been talking to staff, which I wasn't aware of actively, but really there were two parcels that were involved in this, and I would still stand behind the decision that the department made that this would be a county-sponsored amendment, that there wasn't a lobbying effort on behalf of one individual for the county to sponsor this and not have him pay his fair share. I don't think there was an advantage provided to any of the property owners in this instance.
Yeah, Mr.
Yes. I think that there's probably, I found enough information in the document presented by staff to call out something that as I remember, from not too many years ago, like two, that we had accomplished here and is captured in the history, and I'll speak to that when we get to the deliberations.
Sure.
So are you going to be sticking around to respond to any specific when we reach deliberations?
Sure, and I think you have staff that are much more familiar with the details, and because if I speak, I may lead to more misunderstandings being at more of the executive level in the department. Certainly Peter and Elizabeth and Darren and Dave have all been more involved in the kind of the development of the staff reports and those kinds of things and have a sounder history of all of these projects as they've been considered both before you today as well as over time. I would like to ask if maybe even by an informal show of hands, if you think it would be worthwhile to go through and do kind of an after action exercise over this comp plan amendment process at an upcoming meeting over the next several months. I'm seeing a majority of folks nodding.
Majority or consensus that it would be helpful.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Move into the fun part.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Before we continue our deliberations, there is a housekeeping matter that we just, some of the rules require us to go through, which in one of those is needing a motion to, I'm going to make sure I say this right, a motion to adopt findings the same day as deliberations, or that would at least allow us to adopt findings the same day as deliberations. Mm-hmm. If we're able to, we need to start off with that motion so we could eventually do that. Is that correct?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I may. So this is, would be a procedural motion. Your rules of procedure require that you adopt findings on a meeting following deliberation, but allows by unanimous consent of the Planning Commission, you could waive that rule so that at the end of this meeting we can adopt the findings. So what we're looking for now is a motion to waive that rule and consider adoption of the findings at the conclusion of this meeting.
Carrie, I have a question.
So I was just taking a look at the bylaws, and in order to file the minority report, I guess I just want clarification because I expect there'll be some minority reports. They get attached to the findings. So would they have to be written tonight as well?
No, I'll double check with Amanda, but my understanding is we'd reference a minority report in the findings, but then allow that to be attached.
Is there a time frame that I have to get that into you? I mean, does it have to go to the board?
Yes. So let me double check. By the 26th.
And also just as clarifications, if we approve the changing the procedure for tonight, but we reach the end of it and realize we're not, we don't feel like we're ready to adopt the findings, we're not ready to take that next step, then we also still can move the adoption of the findings to a different day. Is that correct? It's not going to lock us in.
It is not going to lock you in, but I would strongly request that you conclude the business tonight so we can meet the Board of County Commissioners schedule for considering the amendment.
Do we have a motion, a procedural motion to adopt, to allow us to adopt the findings the same day as deliberations?
Madam Chairman, before that, I have a question. Sometimes there's a logistical problem in preparing appropriate findings at the conclusion of deliberations. I'm trying to get my head around why are we doing this? Presently, we have to adopt findings at the next meeting following deliberations. Why are we doing this?
The schedule to get the decision by the Board of County Commissioners before the end of the year, we are pushing up against the time frame for the transition to the board. August 21st, introduced this request to the commission at that time.
So
it's a scheduling.
If we approve this change and for some reason we aren't able to adopt appropriate findings, are there any adverse consequences then?
The materials to the Board of County Commissioners would be delayed, and we may have to cancel one of their first work study sessions. As far as drafting the findings, you have with you today a revised packet that brings up to date all the previous actions by the commission through previous deliberations, clarifications based on questions at your last meeting, which I'll get into detail when we get to that amendment, the Hanley amendment. And it now includes draft recommendations as you've taken action so far. So I feel confident that by the end of tonight we can have the intent and the language for adoption tonight. We would give a final clean copy to the chair for signature as soon as convenient. And attach any minority report by the 26th.
Mr. Shadow?
I just want to make sure that you said you're going to address Hanley when we get to it, but we had had a suggestion, or I had difficulty making findings of fact on something that's being deferred. If we can make findings of fact, we don't need to defer. So what was the decision before I...
Sure. So just to reference the full commission, this is on page 12 of 13 of the revised draft. Section 13, finding number 4, that previously was written as a series of bullet points with inconsistent or so and so forth. Based on your commission's questions, we did talk with legal counsel and came to a revised finding that supports the current staff recommendation for deferral, uses language consistent with the staff report, and this is supported by legal counsel. I appreciate you bringing up that question at our last meeting.
Yes, Mr. Bevin.
As we move through tonight's menu, we may come up with some complications on a couple of these issues that are before us that may not be as anticipated by staff or by myself. And so I would probably want to have a little quiet time to read the findings carefully. I'm not a lawyer. I don't read fast. I don't comprehend fast. So I need a little time. So if that is offered, I'll go for it.
Okay. What I will point out to the commission is, for example, on page 11, section 12, finding number 4 there, that series of bullet points. This is a template of from code of the findings that are required to be made for each amendment if we're going to take action to either approve or deny. And I've taken the liberty to highlight the action portion of each one of those findings and provide you with the alternative language if you need to do so to support a recommendation that's different than what's in the staff report.
Any other questions? Ms. Allen?
With the statement of staff in mind that this is not a determinative motion, in the event that we did need to deliberate further, we certainly could. I would move that we waive the procedural rule requiring deliberations to occur and the findings to be adopted as subsequently.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of waiving the requirement that we have the findings on a different day, please raise your hands. That is unanimous. And I think that brings us to our deliberations. And Ms. Allen, I know you have to excuse yourself. At what time was it again?
I do at 6:40.
At 6:40. All right. And that was, just for the record, you indicated you have a conflict on.
Yeah, on the Ulan Tree Farm matter, I was the hearing examiner who made the decision on the original conditional use permit. So in avoidance of any appearance of conflict, I am going to recuse myself from deliberations and decision on that particular item.
Probably it might make some sense then around 6:40 when you have to leave. Maybe we can try to handle, depending on where we are, we can try to handle that one when you're out so that we can move along.
Much otherwise. Appreciated, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All right, let me just get my paperwork in order. So as my notes show, the 4 remaining amendments that we're looking at or that we need to review is number 4 in our tab, which is George's Corner, number 10, which is the site-specific, the Ulan Tree Farm, number 11, the site-specific amendment on Culbertson, and number 12, the site-specific amendment on the Hanley property. For the record, deliberations already started, so this is a continuation of our deliberations, and it makes some sense. I guess we can just go ahead and start in order. Sounds like staff's already kind of got warmed up on number 4, which is George's Corner. Overall, we already had, at the beginning of deliberations, a motion to adopt the entirety of the recommendations from staff. So procedurally, what we're doing for the audience and for the rest of the Land Use Planning Commission is going through each of these individually, knowing that we can make amendments to it and making any motions we want throughout our deliberations. But the starting point is that we've moved to accept the recommendations and we'll move through and decide if we're going to amend them, if we're not going to amend them, or change them. So let's go ahead and open discussion on George's Corner, Lamrid Boundary Adjustment.
And Madam Chair,
yes.
if I may add, Another document we've provided you for tonight is a summary of the main motion and what you've done to date on that, so you can kind of keep score on how that motion is being amended. And there are some standard language for motions at the bottom of that if you wish to use those and find those useful. For prior evenings of deliberation, we've done a brief introduction of the amendment to make sure everyone's refreshed on it. And then we are happy to answer any questions you may have. So the George's Corner Limited Area of More Intensive Rural Development, or LAMRD, is located in North Kitsap at the intersection of Miller Bay Road and State Route 104. This is docketed as a county-sponsored amendment. The amendment adjusts the boundary of the LAMRD in the southeast corner of the area to better align with platted parcel lines and with critical areas. It does, as proposed, redesignate and rezone portions of two split zone parcels. And the staff recommendation is to adopt as proposed. Just to show on a map here, clear for everybody, on the left-hand side is the current zoning classification. And so in dark black bold outline are the areas that would be modified here. And just to clarify, one parcel is this kind of semi-hourglass shaped parcel. And that's referred in the staff report as Lot C. And the other parcel includes this small purple portion of neighborhood commercial zone and is L-shaped with frontage on Miller Bay Road and continues up and with frontage on State Route 104. And the proposal is to this purple, and that's Lot D in your staff report. The proposal is to remove this purple portion on Lot D from the LAMRD, move the LAMRD boundary up north to the parcel line, and redesignate that portion of Lot D as rural residential, which is what's immediately to the south of that area. The other parcel, Lot C, is currently split into three zones as well, and the proposal is to redesignate the remaining portion of that property as neighborhood commercial, and to include it within the LAMRD boundary. So the new zoning map would look like what's on the right here. And it's essentially an area-for-area exchange between those two areas, approximately 0.9 acres. So there's no increase in the size of the LAMRD. And in the staff report, there's a review of the establishment of the LAMRD and the decision criteria that were used to establish the LAMRD, as well as a review of a Growth Management Hearings Board appeal regarding the establishment of this LAMRD back in 2004. The very strongly worded findings in that decision supporting the recommendation for approval as proposed. So with that, we'll open it up for any questions in your deliberation.
There seem to be a number. I'm going to start down at the far left with Mr. Murphy.
Can you speak to, for the parcel that is being changed from inside the LAMRD to out, can you speak to the administrative process of, you know, contacting that owner and what it does to his property value, and is there any legal ramifications or concerns on the county's part, just thinking that neighborhood commercial's worth a lot more than rural residential?
Would it be possible to get the photo of the short plat up?
Yes. So lot D is the property we're discussing, and the portion that's neighborhood commercial is mostly this hatched area here, and continues over this portion of dotted or speckled area. So that property is owned by Bill Broughton, who had requested an amendment in 2015 to move that neighborhood commercial designation to another portion of the property. That request was denied. The staff recommendation at the time was to redesignate his entire property to rural protection. The neighborhood commercial portion of that property is encumbered by wetland buffer, and wetland mitigation restoration area. So it is currently undevelopable from that regard. There are many people that I've spoken to as we've looked at this have indicated that they thought there was a mapping error involved with having the Lambert boundary extend not along property lines, but extend down into that portion of the property. While that seems to be a somewhat commonly held understanding of the situation, there's a technical definition for a mapping error that we could not substantiate with documentation. So that's one of the reasons this amendment is proceeding through the legislative process. Hopefully conclude answering your question, the previous request for the designation and the recommendation for denial the actions of the board to deny it indicate prior legislative intent there. And as a legislative action, the board is able to change the zoning of a property. And in this case, there is not a denial of use, since that area is totally encumbered. And the portion of the property that is most developable is this corner down here, which is unaffected by the proposal. We have heard from the landowner, we do expect comment and possible consideration by the board later in the process. As far as notification goes, the landowner was not directly contacted by staff. Viewed this as an area-wide amendment, and our procedure typically is not to directly contact landowners in that case, but he was included in all of the email notifications that went out regarding this amendment beginning back in November, and received a postcard directly about this amendment in advance of the comment period.
Looking at Mr. Sensen.
I would find it helpful if you could put up a graphic showing the 2016 Lambert boundary that was denied and how that compares with this proposal. Is that possible?
Yes. So this is also attachment C2 in your packets. Actually, that does not have a map specifically of the request. So what I will show you then is a copy of the staff report, which you've received this in the packet of materials that were sent to you. So this is from the 2016 staff report for that amendment request. And this map is mislabeled. So this is not the current land use. This was the proposed land use. And you'll see that that portion, the northern portion of the property was proposed for redesignation to rural protection. What the landowner had originally requested was to take that area of neighborhood commercial and align it along State Route 104. That's what the application requested. There seems to be some potential confusion in the record in 2015. The staff report characterized the request as redesignating the entire property as neighborhood commercial. It looks like the original request was to redesignate the portion along 104, which is fully encumbered by wetlands, wetland buffer, stream, and stream buffers.
So what you're indicating is that the boundaries have been pulled back significantly from the 2016 proposal, or was there confusion as to what those boundaries were?
So there was no confusion about the boundaries of the zoning, but the 2015 request was to move that neighborhood commercial portion from this fully encumbered area by critical areas to another portion of the property, which turns out to be fully encumbered by critical areas as well. So it was denied by the board in 2016. So the proposal before you currently is to take that neighborhood commercial portion on lot D and remove that from the numbered area and designate an area of approximately equal size on lot C that aligns with all of the criteria for designating a Flammard boundary.
Just, I need some clarification on that. If I remember correctly, we had the original proposal was to do the whole thing, and then the landowner, seeing that it wasn't going to be, you know, approved, wanted to then amend it and bring it back to the smaller portion, but since we'd already started the process, that's what I remember that took place, is that both of those were based on what the landowner wanted to do.
So in the documents that were provided attached to the director's letter, we attached this summary of the 2015 amendment on lot D. And this is the project description from the CEPA checklist, which was to relocate the commercial zone on subject parcel from to SR 104. More lengthy responses to the criteria narrative that were filled out by the applicant were describing an equal area moved from where it currently is to SR 104. So I think the where the record potentially got confused is the staff report characterized the request as redesignating the entire parcel of lot D as neighborhood commercial, whereas the original request was to redesignate a portion of it.
No. So the request was in the CEPA checklist, not in the application?
So it's both described in the CEPA checklist as well as in the narrative responses to the decision criteria, which are more lengthy and redundant and are similar to this.
Mr. Neff.
Yes. I'm happy that this discussion has gone on because the properties that you show as being neighborhood commercial are named, their lot numbers are named, and the number that they want to shift this neighborhood commercial to are named. But both of those pieces of property were in the staff report named as the numbers that they show on the map. And both of those properties were recommended by the staff report at that time to be designated as rural protection. Or neighborhood commercial, not neighborhood commercial, but rural protection or rural residential, I forget which. That was all presented in long sessions in this room 2 years ago, and it was deliberated fully for a while, and Planning Commission agreed to that. and endorse that position. The Board of County Commissioners then, in their ordinance to respond to this, and came to the conclusion that the staff recommendation was appropriate and the proposal should be denied. But the Board of County Commissioners specifically adopts the findings and conclusions located in the staff report of 2016. So what I'm saying is that there is no neighborhood commercial zone at that location since 2016. And I didn't see it in the staff report where this came into being. I know paint is easy to move around on a map, but I didn't see it in the report. So I'm having difficulty, and it'd be hard to convince to vote in favor of this or pass this on to the commissioners without a thorough understanding of how that came about. It won't be verbal. It'll be in writing. It'll show me the documents. So that's kind of where I'm at.
That was the intent of providing a summary to you. So if I can just walk you through it, I've excerpted from the documents the relevant sections.
Okay, you're going on page by page here?
Sure. So this is page one of two on this summary that was in the documents that were emailed and downloadable to you. And or if you have a copy of the staff report, that's provided here. So the staff report analyzed only the request on Lot D and did not analyze Lot C. Lot C only shows up in the last half of this sentence in the staff recommendation. I tried to dig through as much of the record as I can and cannot find any further analysis of Lot C. And so the recommendation was to redesignate Lot D to entirely to rural protection, and then it adds the residential portions of Lot C to rural protection. So just to clarify what that looks like on this map, what was recommended was that this entire L-shaped parcel, Lot D, would be rural protection, and the southern and eastern portion of Lot C that currently is split between rural protection and rural residential would all become rural protection, and the portion that is currently neighborhood commercial of Lot C would remain neighborhood commercial. So that was the recommendation in the staff report. And
is that the 2016 staff report?
Yes. And from the ordinance number 534-2016, the board finds that the staff findings and recommendations are appropriate and a proposal should be denied. Identifies the Planning Commission recommended denial. And that the board adopts the findings and conclusions located in the staff report. So these are findings that they say it should be denied. But in the actual section of the ordinance in which they adopt the final actions of the ordinance, they adopt a zoning map and a comprehensive plan map attached with the zoning unchanged. So we've talked about this with legal counsel, and at best the ordinance is ambiguous about the outcome, and I think folks made some of the belief about a mapping error and that a mapping error should be corrected stems from this, but our legal counsel has advised us, and it's the department's opinion, that at best this is ambiguous what the outcome was in 2016, and that we need to process this amendment in order to come to a decision.
Can I just as a follow-up? So what I'm reading in the 2016 report is that even though, I just want to make a clear record, so Lot D, owned by the DJM Construction, was the one requesting the change.
Correct.
But the recommendation came about indicating that there should be a change to both Lot D and Lot C, correct?
Correct. Without analysis of Lot C.
Without analysis of Lot C. And I presume without any notice to the owner of Lot C, I mean, wouldn't there be normally a process that the owner would find out?
My assumption is that they were notified, much like we did in 2018, through postcards and other formal notifications.
There would have been still formal notification, even though it was just a request regarding Lot D?
They would have been notified of everyone within this area should have been notified at that time. So Lot C should have been notified. I don't know for certain how they were, but they should have been.
Can you put the short plat back up?
Yes.
So on Lot D, the majority of that is buffer and wetland restoration, but the portion that's south of C that has the little A, B, C.
Yes. Those portions are drain field easements.
So the developable area on D was designed to be the drain field areas for the commercial lots.
That portion of it, and there is a portion that appears to be outside the buffers in this south. Western corner.
But I'm assuming that when this was short platted by Gary Lindsay, who's probably one of the best developers in the county, he was aware of what was in, because this was done after the boundaries were set. So I'm on Lot C, you can't see it, but can you point out where the actual Lambert boundary is on Lot C, because it's shadow black.
So the Lambert boundary continues approximately across here and then up.
And in the legend on the face of the plat, it actually states that that's what it is as well.
Well, the plat includes a zoning line, which is correct on the eastern side, but not correct on the southern side.
Mm-hmm. So for clarification, the Lamarid isn't growing larger. It's not growing any smaller.
Correct.
It's complying with the CEQA requirements.
Yes. And the Growth Management Act criteria for establishing or amending a boundary for a Type 1 Lambert, which are quite specific.
You also indicated that the county felt responsible in some way for a split zone that was happening here, but I think we also had heard some prior, I don't know if it was prior testimony or documents. Yes. I can't remember
which
about
it. In the 2016 staff report, there's a statement there that the split zoning was not the responsibility of the county. That was the planning department in 2016. There's a new management in the department and new staff. And, the facts are that the Lambert was approved, or I'm sorry, the plat was approved after the Lambert boundary was established, and the department feels partially responsible for the split zoning. That doesn't justify a legislative amendment, but that does that is a one rationale for the department wanting to move this forward. There are other reasons, more primary reasons for moving.
It's also, essentially, it's a goal or it's desirable to avoid lots having split zones.
That's correct.
And does this resolve it, or resolve it completely?
This resolves split zoning on Lot C, which would completely be neighborhood commercial if the amendments were adopted. Lot D would remain split with rural residential and rural protection consistent with the parcels to the south. Grover's Creek traverses approximately the property line, and From here, from this point down, this is rural protection, and this side is rural residential, and that continues on the properties to the south. So there are split zones based around the critical areas there. In this case, that split between rural residential and rural protection will not adversely affect the developability of Lot D.
So whatever a person could develop on that lot right now, even if these changes are made, there's no sort of advantage that I should say that somebody's getting. It's not coming in as an advantage to a particular builder. They can still do the same thing with the property essentially either way.
Essentially, yes, because the neighborhood commercial area is fully encumbered. And so the portion that really is developable is this rural residential area down here. And so through a permitted use or a conditional use, there could be a development at that site, likely. The history and the record for the establishment of this Lambert, the litigation of this Lambert, and subsequent amendment here in this portion of the Lambert is complex, frankly confusing, and I think the department is hoping that through this amendment we can put a lot of that to bed one way or the other. We have a recommendation to adjust the boundary and to adjust the zoning on these two parcels, I've spent a lot of time going through the record, and there are a lot of recollections that initially suggest that the Lambert boundary was intended to follow these platted lines to begin with, and then recollections that in 2016 the zoning was changed, but it's murky at best, and we'd like to create a clear record and conclusion on it.
So at first blush it looks as if there's been a change in the recommendation of the department. Is it your position that it's not been a change, it's been a different analysis?
The analysis is different in that we've looked at both Lot C and Lot D, and that Lot C does align with the criteria for a Lambert boundary. We're allowed under state law to make adjustments to a Lambert boundary. We are not interested in expanding the Lambert. We're not interested in setting precedent for an expansion of the Lambert. In this case, we see it as a kind of a technical amendment that is consistent with the criteria and the outcome of litigation about the boundary.
Yes, you outline a little bit this short plat process and how what kind of review does DCD have over these, and who's responsible, and this created a problem, it seems to me. But I know that there are shortcuts for doing this sort of thing, but I'd like to hear from DCD what the procedure is for a short plat.
I can summarize at a high level the procedure for a short plat.
I can handle it.
There's a submittal of a preliminary plat, which is reviewed for consistency with the code and for improvements on the property, so infrastructure improvements. That preliminary plat, if approved, then those improvements can be put into place, and they're ready. Prior to development, they submit a final plat to finalize the infrastructure and the final parcel lines. That's approved, then the remaining development permits can be requested to develop the site. We can subdivide property and create split zones. It's not illegal to do so. It's not good practice, and we have learned, certainly in this case, what some of the consequences of that can be. So the department has described this outcome as something that should have been caught and should have been addressed at the time the plat was being reviewed, but it was not, and we are presented with the facts on the ground today.
Any other questions? Any other discussion? Carrie Ann?
I guess, why wasn't the 2016 staff report analyzed in this go-around? I mean, we're getting this information late, and people, the public didn't know about it.
So in the staff report, in your binders, attachment C2 is a 7-page history of the establishment of the Lammerd, the parcels here, and includes on page 7 two entries regarding the 2015-16 amendment.
Well, I have to say that's not adequate in this case, because this is a whole staff report that's 180 degrees different than what you're recommending in a 2-year time period. And there's no real analysis as to what has actually changed. And the process is what I have a problem with. Also, that you didn't disclose, you know, what the alternative that was offered in the 2016 staff report. That was clearly not included, because all that was in there was they recommended denial. It didn't go on with the rest of the recommendation. And my other issue is there's no clear analysis of what's changed and what you feel responsible for. I mean, there's nothing actually demonstrated as to what you are responsible for. What does that look like? So I'm just uncomfortable with the whole process. I think it's really messy. I think it needs to go back out for public review, and all of the information needs to be analyzed in light of the 2016 staff report. The ethical guidelines in the AICP talk about when you make a complete change within 3 years, you need to truly analyze what took place. And I just don't, I'm not even sure I disagree with what you want to do, but I don't think that it's a complete process.
I kind of feel, I'll let them respond, but just from what I've heard, I kind of feel as if some of those things, at least for me, I feel like some of them have been resolved. What I've heard is an explanation of perhaps the first maybe wasn't the best analysis, but it sounds like the analysis came in on one lot and a conclusion was made about two lots with an analysis just on one. So whomever drafted that initial report made a conclusion without analyzing everything together. So I think what I've heard is that the change is that you went back and you analyzed both lots together. So that is one of the reasons why we're seeing a different recommendation. And in analyzing both of those lots together, I think you're able to fix the perhaps the errors or the split zone without creating a smaller Lammerd, if I'm following you correctly. So by using both lots, you could create and you could fix what you couldn't fix by just looking at one. But I, throughout that 2016 report, when I read it, I noticed immediately that there was an analysis on that second lot, but then there was randomly a recommendation pertaining to it, which is why I was asking, you know, did anybody know about this? There was no request about it. And then the follow-up is that it wasn't adopted. Correct. It just was kind of the language probably could have been much better. So I feel as if that, for me, is resolving why there's a different recommendation. Because if you're looking at something, you know, through one lens without looking, you know, you can take a recording of an event from one side of it, and then when you see the entire event on a recording, you can see exactly what happened. And depending on the side, you know, what you're looking at, it can look totally different. So I feel as if that has been resolved for me. I don't know if you want to address that further.
Yeah, I think what you said is correct. What I would add to that is on page 7 of 7 of attachment C2, we do specifically reference the recommendation to rezone the property to rural protection, and that was not adopted. So I believe that the record does demonstrate we've disclosed that 2016 amendment, what the recommendation was, what the outcome of that was. And our responsibility in the staff report is to analyze the amendment as proposed this year. So I think we've looked at the record, provided disclosure on all of that. analyze the proposal that is put forth this year, the CEPA analysis also has to look at the proposal put forth this year. So I think we've provided a pretty comprehensive record.
I guess my issue is the county's comped the application fee. You've prepared the application. You're now the proponent of the application. And we were missing materials. And there was other issues that I'm not going to go into now about how this came to be.
But I think those are procedural issues.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Procedurally, I can't even get to the point to make a decision on this because I don't think it's been a good public process.
Ms. Allen.
That's my point.
Well, with all due respect to the commissioner, I think I have to disagree. As a kind of a newcomer to this body and this process, with a pretty deep knowledge of land use myself, I was able to follow the differences between 2016 and 2018 and the staff's thought processes about making this a county-sponsored amendment versus a private amendment, looking at the criteria for that, that site-specific are generally one lot as opposed to two. As I went through the staff thought process in the materials that we were provided initially, I was satisfied with that. Now, the other materials, I think, gave more a lot of depth of detail as to the history of this parcel. But I, for one, am confident that the public, and as I did, had sufficient information to provide input here.
Mr. Shattuck.
And I would just share, I think come back to where the chair started. I really appreciate you bringing this issue up, and I think it is something this commission ought to take a look at. What was the process? Could we make the process better? But my review of the criteria for this amendment, I don't see any fault with the staff recommendation focusing just on the amendment as presented based upon the criteria and the way they've been analyzed. Again, setting aside the issue of could we have done better, I think there's enough here for the public to have made adequate comment, and that it does meet the criteria. And
Mr. Nevin, you look like you're gathering your thoughts there.
I'm still having problems with the fact that, you know, all legal has said they're ready to go and support this no matter what, and that front may happen. I don't know. But it seemed to me the simple reading of the history, even just reading those few lines at the very end there on page 7 of 7, is that there is no commercial zone there. That is gone. It's not a problem to reduce a land rid. If you mistakenly put wetland in a wet land rid, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So it does make a lot of sense to remove it from the land rid. And so zoning the property as rural protection or rural residential does that. And that's what happened in 2016, and there has been no legal action to change that I'm aware of.
Well, I think where we're at here procedurally is the original motion that was passed as a whole by this body was the motion as a group to recommend and concur with the staff report on recommendation for this particular amendment that we've been referring to, number 4, George's Corner. That's where we stand on it. Are there any other motions that need to take place?
Yeah, so the main motion was to adopt the docket as presented by staff, which includes a recommendation to approve this amendment. So if the Planning Commission wishes to take other action, that would require a motion to amend the main motion to do something other than recommend approval.
So right now the motion on the table is to approve the recommendation in the staff report. Does the body feel ready to vote on that? All those in favor of approving the recommendations contained in the staff report, please raise your hands. All those opposing the recommendations, 3 for the record, 3 opposing, no abstentions, that counted for everybody. All right, the motion passes. And now it is 6:30. I think Ms. Allen is going to, as we addressed at the beginning, recuse herself from discussion on the Yulin Tree Farm site-specific amendment. And let's go ahead and take up discussion on that. That is number 10 for our binders. It was Yulin Tree Farm that she has a conflict with that, so she wasn't going to weigh in on that one anyway.
Okay. All right. So, for the record, Liz Williams, planner with the Department of Community Development. In binder tab 10, you have the site-specific request for the Yulin Tree Farm. The specific request is to add a mineral resource overlay designation to approximately 96 acres. The site is located within rural central Kitsap County. It's about a mile southwest of Kitsap Lake, and it's within the larger parcels that make up the Yulin Tree Farm. The current zoning and land use designation for the property is forest resource lands. The proposed amendment would shift the land use designation and zoning classification to forest resource lands with a mineral resource overlay. There has been a CEPA determination of non-significance, and the department is recommending approval of this request. Because there is commercially significant mineral resources on the site, it's consistent with the development agreement between the county and the applicant, and it is consistent with the conditional use permit that was approved for the use. So up on the screen, you'll see on the left is the current zoning designation of the site, which is forest resource lands. And then on the right is the proposed zoning classification where you see that overlay being applied. The intent of the overlay is to protect lands with mineral resources that are commercially significant. And it is also to ensure that adjacent property owners are properly notified about future activities that may occur on the site. So I wanted to clarify too, I know Commissioner Nevins had a question at the last meeting about the attorney letter. There was some public testimony in the comments about a letter, and I'd like to have you take a look in the larger documents of your public comment matrix. Comment number 21 is the attorney letter that was referred to in the testimony that you were speaking about.
Can you just give me that citation again? I'm sorry.
Sure. It's comment 21 within the copy of written comments that were summarized within the matrix.
When was that distributed?
The comment matrix and all of the written comments were provided on August 21st.
At the meeting I missed.
Okay. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have as you enter your deliberations on this particular request.
Does everybody else have the comment matrix? I'm going to give Mr. Nevin a chance to review that. Yes, Mr. Spenson.
I see comment 21 is the letter from the Brickland Law Firm. I noticed in the comment matrix there were very rudimentary response, but has the critical issues raised in that letter been addressed in the findings or in the anywhere in the staff report?
Sure. So the specific letter discusses states that the proposal was to remove the forest lands designation, and that actually the request does not remove the underlying zoning and land use classification. This is an overlay designation that would take or be on the property in the interim while mining activities were occurring. And then once the mining activities are completed and the Department of Natural Resources has lifted their reclamation permit from the site, then there's a process within Kitsap County Code that would be undertaken to remove that overlay designation. And in addition to that, as part of the development agreement, the property it has to be restored back to forestry once those activities have been completed. So it's not actually removing this land from that designation. In terms of mining not being allowed within the forest resource lands, there is actually a provision within Kitsap County Code that does allow for it does exempt properties from the minimum lot size within the mineral resource overlay designation if the property is used for extraction. So one of the points in the letter was that the property does not meet the minimum lot size for the overlay. There's actually another section of code that exempts properties that are used from for extraction from that lot size provision. In addition, mining is not allowed within forest resource lands. The applicant has already obtained administrative approval for that land use through the conditional use process, so that's not, you know, part of the commission's deliberations at this time. That decision has been already made by the hearing examiner. And then in terms of the development agreement process, the development agreement, the letter speaks to the process and procedures of how rezonings go with land that are involved with a development agreement. In this instance, the development agreement states, and I believe it's on, I can actually reference it if anyone has a copy with them, but it talks about how the county will consider this land use designation for the mineral resource overlay at the next 2016 Planning Commission meeting or the next available opportunity for that land use designation to occur. So the development agreement actually referenced the procedure that should be followed by the county related to the development agreement procedures. So I think that captures most of the items that were in that specific letter related to this request.
I appreciate your comments. Are they reflected in the record when and if the Planning Commission makes a recommendation to county commissioners, or just by mentioning them in a public hearing, is that sufficient? Or because I didn't see anything.
Yeah, that's my understanding that because we are at a public meeting today and we're okay. Discussing this during your deliberation, it does enter into the record.
Because I didn't see much in the staff report.
Yeah, so. A lot of times, you know, during the public process, these things will come out and.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions for staff? Like an auctioneer going once, going twice. As it stands then, by adoption of the overall group of recommendations by the staff, the current motion or the current status is adoption. The recommendations by the staff. Does anybody have any motions or amendments to what is on the table to vote right now? All right. Then all those in favor to affirm our recommendation to concur with the staff report for the recommendations in number 10, which we identify as a Yulin tree farm, all those in favor of adopting the staff recommendations, please raise your hands. That is unanimous of those who are present. We can go to Culbertson. Culbertson's number 11 in our binder.
Yep. So following along as the chair, Madam Chair mentioned, binder tab 12 is where you'll find the staff report and documentation for the Culbertson request. So at this time, I wanted to start out by just saying we have two mineral resource overlay requests and designations. And the Yulin Tree Farm request is a little different because the property owner has already gone through the conditional use permit process, where in the case of Culbertson, there has not been any land use approval for a mining operations on the site. And the request tonight will not actually allow or permit an operations from occurring. So this is simply to add the mineral resource overlay designation that would limit the land uses that would be designated on this property and also protect that resource from being developed otherwise in the short term or long term. The site is located adjacent to an existing quarry operations, just adjacent to the Gorst subarea, or sorry, Gorst urban growth area. And it's approximately 69 acres in size. The current land use designation is rural protection. And the zoning classification is also rural protection. I wanted to note that mineral resource extraction is an allowed use within the rural protection zone. So, you know, this is something that the property owner could come in tomorrow and request a conditional use permit to site the operations. My understanding that the property owner is looking to add the mineral resource overlay designation to protect this commercially significant mineral resource from developing as something else. The department has done the CEPA review and a determination of non-significance has been issued. We are recommending adoption with revisions. So those revisions would be to Kitsap County Code. Currently, the mineral resource overlay designation, a mineral resource extraction or quarry, I'm just going to refer to it as a quarry, is permitted through by right. So there's no additional review, there's no public review that goes into that request. What staff is recommending is that the use change and require a conditional use permit approval. So within the mineral resource overlay zone, any mineral resource extraction would require also a conditional use permit before it would actually occur on the site. So that is in essence to ensure that there's some continuity between the different zonings for this land use and also encourage public participation during the project-specific aspects of considering the use for this site. Peter, if you want to move to the next slide, I just want to give an overview of the area. So on the left is the current zoning. You'll see the subject site is outlined in black, and the proposed overlay would then add that hatching to that property. The existing quarry, there is an existing quarry in the blue area here. There's residential neighborhoods or residential properties that are north of the site and east of the site. And then there's also one property that has been developed with a residential home just south of the site. The west is the City of Bremerton watershed property. And I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm sure there's a lot of questions that the commission has about this particular request.
Two quick questions. So you're saying we need to amend code for a
requiring a CUP for a mineral overlay just in the rural protection zone, or would this also affect the ULIN?
So currently within the, ULIND already has an executed conditional use permit.
But the next ULIND, they would then have your proposal.
Exactly. So the current zoning classification of rural protection does allow for mineral resource extraction through a conditional use permit. The proposed revision that the department is recommending is that the mineral resource overlay permits mineral resource extraction by right. And so that's shifting the level of review that goes into that land use from something that requires a public hearing to something that's just administratively approved by the department. So in order to encourage public participation in the project-specific elements, which is a lot of the public comment that we've received on this request at this point, that would be why we're recommending a conditional use for that mineral resource overlay as well for that use. So it's just consistent across all zones now that the mineral resource extraction will require a conditional use.
So I don't see that in the proposed findings. Or do you have a proposed amendment?
So the in your staff report and packet in binder tab 12, attachment C3 is actually the proposed revision. And what we did was we just took out an excerpt of the Kitsap County Code, so section 17.410.042 of the zoning use table would change categorical use 602 from a permitted use to a conditional use.
And then finally, last meeting, you were going to share information about the blasting exercise, and you said, time out, let's tell everybody about it.
Sure. So the department did have the opportunity, the site operator did allow us to come out and observe a blast. And so what we did was we borrowed a noise meter from the city of Bainbridge Island to go out and evaluate the noise meters or the noise levels in the area. As a caveat, I'm not a certified noise meter operator, so I just wanted to put that on the record. But with that being said, we did utilize this meter, and we took some readings and were located on Sand Dollar, which is if you could pull up a, thank you. Yeah, you want to point. Yeah, we were right in that area. And there is a home that is in that location that is in close proximity to the site. And that's where we received a lot of public comment on this proposal. So we wanted to observe and understand kind of how the operations were affecting that area. We did some metering while they were doing rock crushing. Those levels were below our required noise ordinance. We also did readings when there were no operations in place. And so what happens is about 5 minutes before a blast, there's a siren that goes off, and then about 1 minute before the blast, there's another siren that goes off, and they shut down all the equipment, so it gets pretty quiet. And so, again, it wasn't a reduction in the noise level of a significance. And then the blast, I would equate it anecdotally to kind of a crackle of lightning is kind of my interpretation. And then there was, I could feel a little bit of a pressure wave. And again, this is just my own kind of personal experience with it. The levels that we recorded for the blast did not exceed the noise levels in Kitsap County Code. And also, Kitsap County Code does exempt blasting activities from the noise ordinance. And so, but with that being said, the blast was still at that location below the minimum requirement that the county does have for noise.
So as I understand it currently, because on this one we did hear a lot of testimony, and we're up here making sort of a a designation decision, yep. which is separate and apart from noise complaints and things like that, which are completely understandable. It's clear that there's unhappiness. I don't know anything about the noise levels, so whether or not that violates local county code, I couldn't speak to, but it's clear that the relationships are likely strained. But what I'm hearing from the staff is that one of the reasons for the staff recommendation being what it is for this amendment is to make sure that citizens do have the opportunity to testify. Because right now, as it stands, a person can simply get a conditional use permit, avoid any public commentary, avoid any public input, and go about doing what they wish to do on the property.
I want to clarify that a little bit here. So the revision that we're proposing, if that revision was not approved by the commission and you did recommend approval of the overlay, they would not need a permit at all to, they would need site development permits, but they would not need a conditional use permit.
So there wouldn't be the opportunity.
Correct. There would not be an opportunity for the public to weigh in on project specific elements of the development.
So if we accept the staff
recommendation,
then we allow the citizens that live in the area the opportunity to respond to the request for the permit.
Correct, and that would be consistent with the level of a review that is currently allowed on the property today. Because like I mentioned, the rural protection zone does allow for quarries to be sited, and it requires a conditional use permit.
So as it stands, either way, could the blasting happen without adopting this? The blasting
right.
could or would right. happen with a permit, but without public input.
If the commission approves the overlay designation but does not make the revision, then the operator could come in and not have a conditional use permit. The way the department is recommending it today, they would have to get that conditional use permit, which is consistent with the level of review that is currently slated for the site. And maybe these guys can help me say this in a different way, because I'm seeing that you're not really.
Yeah, I think I understand.
Dave Ward for the record. One of the reasons why we want to set this up so that way a conditional use permit is required is so that way at the time when there are details that are project specific, like hours of operation, when blasting will occur, a proposed footprint for the excavation, all of those sorts of questions, which we don't know right now, we want to make sure that the public has an opportunity to voice an opinion on that and to play a role in the decision making. The way the code is set up right now, if we put this mineral resources overlay into place, which is intended to protect the resource, not to permit a mine, but it's intended to protect the resource, if we do that right now in this particular zone, it would allow a quarry to be permitted without that public input. We think that public input is important.
I think we touched on it in work study, but the comp plan policies for mineral resources seem really thin to me. And looking at King County, Pierce County, especially when you're looking at quarries, is there anything we're going to be doing to involve the neighbors and the landowner in developing better policies? Because those are what are going to drive the conditions on the conditional use permit. I mean, we have more policies for food and agriculture. So is that on the horizon?
I think that's going to depend on, that was one of the points of order that Commissioner Nevins did bring up at the last meeting in terms of recommending that a countywide inventory be looked at. It's my understanding that the last time the county undertook that effort was in 1990. And so, it may be time that we look at that as a department, and it would be helpful in terms of having some decision criteria specific to this land use.
Can we make that a finding in our recommendation?
You certainly can.
I think that would be very important.
Point of
hear you.
Just a point of order is that the recommendation specifically would be about the proposed amendment, and I would suggest the Planning Commission could encourage the department and the board to do that study and consider policy improvements.
Yes, Mr. Swenson.
It's been my impression that much of the testimony that we've received on this has been from property owners located north of the proposed overlay area. I believe if approved as requested, we would be putting the boundary literally contiguous with one or more of these property owners that have testified. Has any consideration been given to pulling back the limiting the north boundary to promote compatibility with these residential uses to the north? It's my impression that once this overlay classification is approved, the horse is partially out of the barn. The conditional use permit, you set hours and blasting parameters and that kind of thing, but I've really been struck by some of the testimony that we've heard over the last several months from property owners who have been adversely affected by the existing quarry, which is farther away from many of them than what we're being asked to approve tonight.
Yeah. I would say that the conditional use permit process will also allow for increased setback requirements for the project-specific attributes of this request. And the downside that I would caution the commission is that the resource, you know, may not be limited to the area that you pull back that boundary to. And so in making that designation, recognizing the fact that the resource may potentially expand beyond that protection that you're putting, or the overlay designation.
I don't think I followed what you were saying. Can you?
Sure. So the conditional use permit process will allow conditions to be placed on the site for increased setbacks to help mitigate, I think, what the commissioner is mentioning for the impacts to neighboring properties. In addition to that, what I'm saying is that the overlay designation to protect that resource, it's unfair, or it's hard to say at this point that the resource does not extend to the property line. And so, the designation is to protect the commercially significant resource on the site. And so by restricting that boundary, that may not cover the area and extent of the resource that is available. I think Peter has something he'd like to mention.
Add to that, the conditional use permit process would be a more appropriate time to consider what those setbacks would be. Analysis and findings would be available to justify what that setback should be. In this process, we don't have the details in order to determine what an appropriate setback is. The designation does not guarantee that the extraction would occur to the boundary of the overlay area. It just identifies that the property is, the resource on the property is protected for that use if it's approved and as it's approved through a conditional use permit.
One comment here on this. We talk about setbacks. We're talking about taking a noise measurement. I have not heard anything about any kind of investigation using some of the Bureau of Mines criteria.
Sure.
On measuring vibrations, shock waves, and such. So
I'm a little bit miffed that we're not using some of those tools to really measure this, because it's fairly obvious from the complaints and that there is effects there. Mm-hmm. The pressure waves, the vibrations, somewhere we need to say we need to measure this so that if harm is done, it can be stopped or addressed.
Right. What I want to say related to that is we did actually request, as part of the existing quarry operations that are on Sherman Heights Road today, their conditional use permit does require them to do seismic monitoring, as you're mentioning. And we did request that information from the property owner when the questions were raised by the within the public testimony. Those reports, we did review them, and they all did show levels below the federal level standard for vibrations. And so we do have that information and have reviewed that information in terms of the existing operation.
Right.
But your point is heard, you know, related to the future activities and the conditional use permit. I think that would be the time that those conditions would be placed.
Right. And I would think that some monitoring. Of that monitoring needs to be not just in the quarry area, but outside the quarry area to show the effects of what's going on.
Right.
Because
it is actually the sites of their monitoring are outside of the property currently.
Okay.
So there is a site on Quarry Road that is monitored outside of the area, and then also along Sherman Heights Road, just adjacent to the site entry. So it's a little further south, Peter. Keep going, right about in that area.
And
the other monitoring site.
But none of them were north.
Right. With that being said, you know, as vibrations and activity moves through, you know, you've got these waves and bands mm-hmm. of, and so as it goes further and further from that location of monitoring, it's presumed that that level of vibration would decrease as it goes out further. And so Dave probably.
That said, there are variations in the substrate. And vibration carries different through different substrates. At the time when the conditional use permit is applied for, that would be the time to investigate the specifics of the site, the bounds of the excavation, what kinds of mitigation would be required both for sound and vibration, all of that sort of thing. Frankly, at this point in the process, we simply don't know enough about the specifics of the operation to even judge that. It's speculative at this point.
Mr. Murphy.
Yeah, just to reiterate that, I think in the interest of time, this is the second time we've been through this discussion to the point of just saying we can't analyze a project we don't have. Okay, all this discussion is about a project that we don't have. That's not what this is about today. This is about, do we do the overlay? And yes, we should do it with a conditional use because that is the safety net that allows public input during the process when there's a project.
Correct. Well, I think there's two. I mean, in theory, we could, we first have to address the mineral overlay. And then second, we could recommend the amendments that have been adopted through the Kitsap County Code, which I think sound like a good idea regardless. But procedurally, what happens with this land if the commission doesn't recommend the mineral resource overlay? What are the next steps? What can they do? Does that somehow stop things? I'm just trying to understand, you know, a bigger picture here.
So if the commission were to defer or to deny the request that's in front of you today, as I mentioned, the use that they would like to move forward with is an allowed use within the current zoning classification of the property.
On that portion of the property.
Exactly.
So they could
come tomorrow, apply for a conditional use permit for a quarry, and still move forward with their...
And would that be affected by the recommendations at all that the county code be changed?
No.
Can I ask for, do you want to edit your last statement? I think you said that they could come in tomorrow for a conditional use permit.
Correct.
They can come in tomorrow for an outright.
Not if the overlay is not placed on top of the property.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And I guess that's really the issue. I think you hit it right on. What difference does it make? If we're going to require a CUP, if you have a mineral overlay, and you do what you want to do now already, if you have a CUP, this is an exercise, isn't it?
In essence, what it does is it limits the types of land uses that can occur on the property, and it also provides notice to the surrounding property owners that mineral activities or extraction activities may occur on the site.
If I could may just follow up again, I've tried to follow you with regard to, we have some recommended changes to go from permitted to CUP. I don't see the language. What I've got is something dated September 14 in our recommended findings. And beyond that, I'm trying to figure out what is the record, for example, in the recommended finding that we're going to make tonight, that this will be compatible with neighboring properties and not likely to adversely affect the value of those properties. I don't see anything in the staff report. The only thing we've heard is a public testimony that it's going to have a significant impact and it's not compatible.
So the department's recommendation is based on the fact that mining activities have occurred in this area going back all the way until the 80s. And so this isn't a new land use that is being introduced to the area. And so in terms of consistency and compatibility, that's where that finding is coming from.
Well, that's not what the finding says, though. The finding says it is compatible with neighboring properties. Which neighboring properties is it compatible with?
Just one, but not the other.
Properties, and it's not likely to reverse values. I think our testimony of this hearing has been, I haven't heard anything that would say, geez, you don't have to worry if you live next door to this expanded quarry. Your property value is going to be just fine. I don't think there's any testimony to that effect. And I may support this in general, but I don't see how we can make some of these findings based on the record we have.
And that's part of the process and procedure, and we're happy to walk you through appropriate findings based on the deliberations and decisions of the commission.
So what we're hearing is that rock blasting is going to continue happening on this property regardless of the mineral resource over there?
At the established quarry.
Commissioner Shattuck, in response to that specific finding, county code does require us to make a finding about compatibility with neighboring properties and effect on value of property. So if there's another way to phrase a finding there, we'd be happy to work through that with you.
But when you say the county code requires a finding of that, I guess that affects how I feel about the current sort of motion on the table, because I don't know that we have that finding.
Yeah, so for example, I mean, based on the conversation you just had, you might consider revising that finding to be that given the existing mining operation in the area and adjacent expansion, I'm just thinking out loud here, but the adjacent designation would be similar in effect to neighboring properties, compatibility and value. So that may be more appropriate finding to than how it's currently phrased. So maybe if I could rephrase that is that the proposal will be similarly compatible to neighboring properties and have a similar effect to property values as the current mining activities. Something to that effect.
I struggle with that.
Yeah, because now how do you define it similar? What's similar?
Correct. You've just dressed it up differently.
Why can't we just make the finding that it does impact and it will reduce their property value. That's been our testimony.
Or will not be compatible.
It is not compatible. Right.
I don't know how.
Our recommendation should also include that we have formed a study group to look at comp plan policies to, you know, deal with those issues.
Like,
that might be a way to get that into the findings.
And, well, and maybe another approach also would be to state that, you know, a future mineral resource operation could likely have effects that should be mitigated through a conditional use permit process. That's another option.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, any land use change will affect the neighboring property. That's normal. It can go up or down. But this amendment or suggestion seems to me to give more protection to the neighbors than the current situation by issue of the required conditional use permit. Presently, from what I understand, mining can go on.
Well, I don't think that's been what the staff has said. Mining cannot go on without a CUP now. What staffs, I have heard staff say, is by doing the mineral overlay, the neighborhood, when you buy your house in this neighborhood, you know there's a mineral overlay. You're going to get notice of that. And again, if there was ever an argument that it's going to affect property values, that's it. I mean, there's a big red neon sign on it.
Does anybody have any, right now as it stands, the motion stands to adopt the staff recommendations on both the mineral resource overlay as well as the amendment to the county code. That's what's currently on the table. But I feel like I'm hearing people discuss potential amendments, and I want everybody to have time to kind of think that through, whether you want to do it on the spot or it's currently 7:12, whether we need to take a brief personal break.
This is kind of what I've warned about things can get complicated on findings of fact, and so we might want to see some language, but I don't know if we want to be wordsmithing up here at the board and try to do that.
I have a very simple amendment. It's to adopt the alternative language that's in the in what's been provided us to staff, that finding of fact 4H will be amended to provide that that the amendment as revised will not be compatible with neighboring properties and will likely adversely affect the value of these properties. That would be my motion.
Can you cite the page number that you're looking
for? What I'm working off of are the draft findings of fact.
11 of 13.
2018 is page 11 of 13.
So looking at the record for subsection 4, is that right?
Right. Sorry.
And what subsection after that?
H.
Bottom.
So the amendment proposed is under 4H would be that it will not be compatible with the neighboring properties.
It's will likely. The language that's in the right side
Accepting
bar
the commented PB27.
PB27.
So there's a motion to amend that's the findings. We'd be doing that at this point. We have to first, before we can amend findings, we have to first vote on the issue of the staff recommendations regarding the overlay and the amendment to the Kitsap County Code. And I think I understand, and the point is well taken on the findings, which I think is wise, but we still have to get there. And I didn't know if... we wanted to take a few minutes to take a quick break. If anybody wanted to consider whether they wanted to amend the motion itself that's on the table.
On the site specific, this was brought by the landowner. Is that correct?
Correct. It's not the property owner. The property owner signed a certificate to authorize the application to move forward. The applicant is the existing Kitsap Reclamation and Materials.
Okay, my point is it's not a county proposed.
Correct.
And you'd mentioned that we haven't done a study. countywide and 30 years for where else we might do this overlay.
Correct.
Okay. And,
all right, it's currently 7:15. Let's go ahead and take a 5-minute break so everybody can stretch their legs, have a quick break, and consider